to speak of it before I did, was perhaps reminded subconsciously of horse's hair, a mane gripped in the hand, rejected the idea of hair altogether and substituted reins.
Have you had enough of this, Troy?
No, I want to know all about it.
There's not much more. She drove Garcia to his warehouse. He'd got the keys. She murdered him there because she was hell-bent on marrying Pilgrim and becoming a very rich peeress, and because it was in Garcia's power to stop her. She's an egomaniac. She drove the caravan back to your garage and drove herself back to the Pasco's house in Pilgrim's car. The distance to the warehouse is 30 miles. At that time of night, she'd do it easily in an hour and a half. She must have been back at the studio by 3 and probably got to the Pasco's by 3:30. Even supposing she lost her way, and I don't think she would, because there's a good map in the caravan, she'd a margin of 2 hours before there was a chance of the servants being about. And, I'm finishing up where I began, she murdered Sonia, knowing the knife was there, as deliberately as she murdered Garcia.
Will they find her guilty?
I don't know, Troy. Her behavior when we arrested her was pretty damning. She turned on Pilgrim like a wildcat, because he kept saying he'd swear she'd never worn the coat. If he'd said she had often worn it, half our case would have gone up in smoke. Alain was silent for a moment, and then knelt down on the rug beside Troy. "Has this all made a great difference to you?" he said. "Is it going to take you a long time to put it behind you?"
"I don't know. It's been a bit of a shock for all of us."
"For Pilgrim, yes. The others will be dining out on it in no time. Not you."
"I think I'm sort of stunned."
"It's not that I liked any of them much. It's just the feeling of all the vindictiveness in the house.
So disquieting to remember what Seacliff's thoughts must have been during the last week. I almost feel I ought to have a priest in with a bell and a book to purify the house. Now, the thought of the trial is unspeakably shocking. I don't know where I am."
She turned helplessly towards Alain, and in a moment she was in his arms.
"No, no," said Troy. "I mustn't. You mustn't think."
"I know." Alain held her strongly. He could feel her heart beating secretly against his own. Everything about him, the trees, the ground beneath him, and the clouds in the still autumn sky, rose like bright images in his mind and vanished in a wave of exultation. He was alone in the world with her, and with that moment of supremacy before him came the full assurance that he must not take it. He knew quite certainly that he must let his moment go by. "Shall I tell you what I think? I think that if we had met again in a different way, you might have loved me. But because of all that has happened, your thoughts of me are spoiled. There's an association of cold and rather horrible officiousness. Well, perhaps it's not quite as bad as all that, but my job has come between us. You know, at first I thought you disliked me very much. You were so prickly. Then I began to hope a little. Don't cry, dear Troy. It's a great moment for me, this. Don't think I misunderstand. You so nearly love me, don't you? So nearly. And I shall still allow myself to hope a little."
This has been an Hachette Digital production of Artists in Crime, written by Nio Marsh and read by Benedict Cumberbatch. Abridged by Katie Nicol. Produced and directed by Tamsin Collison. Text copyright, Nio Marsh, 1938. Production copyright, Hachette Digital 2008.
This audio program is presented by Audible.com. Audible. Audio that speaks to you.